Testing. Zest. Okay. That's the new way I'm going to test my recorder from now on. I'm going to yell zest.
Zest.
Zest. And of course, no one's going to understand that for a few more weeks after this goes live. Mm, but zest true. It is.
Yep.
Hi, everybody.
Here we are.
Drinking our coffee.
Yep. It's mostly gone, though.
Yeah, mine
because
too.
Again, 45 minutes into the conversation, we start recording stuff.
Yeah, we really should find a way to record the stuff we don't mean to record because the fun value of some of that, and it's it's only tangentially related to hopnology.
Tangentially?
Very tangentially.
Tenuously tangential.
So peek behind the curtain here. We always start the conversation with, okay, so what are the major points we're going to hit here on today's conversation? And then it dovetails into, you know, stuff going on at home, mm-hmm. and it all goes sideways.
Day job
there.
Stuff,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. A lot of things that no one would want to hear and our spouses wouldn't want you to hear, but they don't listen and nobody knows them.
Nobody, you know? Exactly.
So we could really say whatever we want. Mm. That's the other podcast, as we
it
keep
is.
Saying.
Yep. Yep. That's the podcast that happens before we hit record.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's the preamble to the podcast.
The preamble.
Yeah,
oh,
preamble.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, we can run with that. We can do something mm-hmm. with that. Mm-hmm. So by the time you're listening to this, you will have heard our first release from Backyard Brew Farm.
Yep.
Which is right on the same stream, however they call it, with Hopnology. And hopefully you enjoyed that, and there'll be a couple more there before we lock it down behind the Hopnology Patreon side of things. And make it part of that whole the thank you to our patrons. So if you're enjoying that first one, give the next one or two a listen, and then join us there on Patreon and listen to more stuff about very, very small scale and homebrewing side of things. And that's what Zest was all about.
Mm-hmm. Zest!
Zest! We had a fun time recording about Zest.
Well, this conversation may not be as zesty as that conversation was.
Granted, that is true.
Oh, lovely. Oh, I saw.
Boom.
See what you did there.
That's my one contribution. I'm just going to sit back and listen for the rest of this.
Great.
We're going to talk about grants today.
Yep.
About grants, because grants are free money. Woo-hoo!
Free money, right? Come on. All I have to do is beg and they give me money to run my farm? How awesome is that?
It's America's wonderful, isn't it?
Wrong. Wrong. On all accounts.
Yeah. There's a lot of things wrong with that statement there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to talk about grants today. And as we were, again, in the preamble, saying, did we record this before? Did we talk about grants? We might have, but to your point, if we can't remember when we talked about it, then we probably ought to talk about it again.
Yep. And the other thing that, just to throw it out there, because maybe you gang have remembered something that we don't, we say on a fairly regular basis while we're recording, you know what, that's a whole episode to itself, we'll record about that one another time. And I try to write those things down, and I'm sure that's what happened with grants, is at some point we said, oh yeah, but we don't have time to talk about that right now, but we will later. If you've been waiting with bated breath, maybe this is the week they'll get to subject X that they said they would, send us a note and remind us, because I can't remember what I had for breakfast today. So
I was, what was it, about four, I was back in October. I took like 10 days off from the day slave job, and I just was in my workshop for 10 days doing James things. And I was in there, I listened to all of the Falstbottom Girls episodes and about 3/4 of our back catalog.
Ah.
And every time I heard us say, you know what, we ought to talk about that, I made a note.
So where's that list?
We've gone through it.
Oh, gee. Okay.
So, but, you know, granted, how close was I paying attention all the time when, you know, I had some big piece of industrial equipment running?
Was this when you were trying to write your name on the moon?
I was trying to write my name on the moon, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it just says jam.
Oh. But
then the laser tube burned out.
That will happen.
It will. Yes. Okay. So, yeah, we're going to talk about grants today. And this came about because for whatever reason, I'm still looped into the USDA's grant group and they constantly still send me stuff. So they just sent an email last week that was USDA invests more than $330 million in specialty crop grants incentives to purchase fruits and vegetables and help cotton producers. Well, if you're a cotton slash hop grower, that might be important to you. But we're going to be focusing on the specialty crop grants and incentives to purchase in this episode. And that's a ton of cash, $330 million. Bunch. $170 million of that $330 is specifically for the Specialty Crop Block Grant Program, which is what we're going to talk about. Now, to our international listeners, non-U.S. listeners, I'm sorry, you're likely not eligible for these grants. But we're going to talk not about the program details. We're going to talk about what we're going to talk about is going to be applicable to all grants. But I'm just giving you some background on where this idea came from to have this conversation. So.
Yep. So don't turn us off. This is much more about the concept of grants and how to fit them into your business schedule and those sorts of things.
And the dirties. Go.
I was going to say, because there are some wonderful opportunities out there, but you got to be careful with what you're committing to.
Yeah, the dirty secrets around grant money. And it's, depending on what you sign yourself up for, you're going to be like, yeah, okay, I got a pile of money, but was it worth it? I don't know. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. It's kind of just like borrowing money from family. You know, I got a bunch, but was it really worth what I had to
do? Yeah, exactly. Like, ultimately for grants, and this is the thing that when people start thinking about grants, they think about, I'm going to write you a sob story and you're going to give me money. You're going to send me a check. No, it doesn't work that way. I'm going to say most because I'm sure there are some smaller grants out there, which they shouldn't really be called grants. They should be called awards or something like that, because they really are just like, here's $5,000 to help promote your business. Go for it. Those are like winning the lottery. Those aren't the grants that we're talking about. We're talking about grants, true grants, where you will get money from usually the government. Could be from other nonprofit or private non-governmental organizations, but usually it's the government. They're going to give you money and you're going to give them something back. So what is that? It's usually data or on some sort of question that you researched, system that you built to help people other than yourself. I mean, you could be included in that, like a marketing system. I think when we talked about clubs versus grower organizations, co-ops, things like that, and the money it takes to get those things off the ground, grant money's perfect for that. And because it could take $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 to get a serious co-op started, marketing co-op, materials, production co-op, whatever it is. Grants are the perfect place to look for that because it checks off a bunch of the boxes that grants are looking for, which is, you know, social sustainability and market development and helping others. Helping growers other than yourself in order to build a better community. Those are great boxes to check for grants. But they're not all marketing grants. There's a lot of them that are characterized by answering specific questions that the industry needs to know.
So really research projects.
Yeah, they're research projects. We'll give some examples of the different kinds of projects that we worked on and where they fit into this. But I just wanted to clarify for folks that this is certainly a tit-for-tat relationship. You're going to get cash from the government, but you've got to give them something back. And that something that you give them back is going to be shared with the public.
Yep. So this is it's a consulting contract, really.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Where there's a deliverable here, it's, you know, we're going to say it over and over again. It's not free money. It's not a gift.
So let's just jump into some of these. And the ones, the grants that we were, that we typically got were this specialty crop block grant. And if you look at the details of the, and you can, this is all online, you can go read it. There are deadlines for applying, but there are steps and hoops that you have to jump through. You know, it's an application. And in that application, it's very detailed. There's a template. And any reputable grant body is going to require the same stuff. It's going to, you know, you're going to have to write your proposal. You're going to have to give details of how you're going to execute this thing. I've been on the grant review committee for the specialty crop block grant for several years. And then they stopped asking me because I was too hard on people, I guess. Because damn. If you could write in crayon on a computer, a lot of these were written in crayon.
Well, when every person who applies for a grant, when you respond with, well, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, right.
That's not value add, really.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. Cynical James. But also asking a scientist to be on a grant committee, or a review committee for non-scientists, and you read their proposals and how they're going to execute these things, I'm thinking like, oh my God, none of you get any money. This is awful. Think harder. I'm not on those committees anymore. You know, you rank everybody from 1 to 10 on like 5 or 6 different things, and all mine are like 2, 3. Think harder. Here are my notes. Anyway, so where was I going with this?
I
nobody ever knows.
No.
Okay, so the grants that we did were usually, you know, we were techie people, so we were all about researching and driving to an answer or solving a technical. And so as part of our grant application, it was laid out like a research project. This is, you know, we talked about the scientific method, what, 7 or 18 times?
Yeah, I feel like it was that many times. Yeah.
So we'd lay out our research project. We say, this is the objective. This is why we believe this is important. This is how we're going to go about doing it. This is what the deliverables are going to be. This is how long it's going to take us. And ultimately, this is how much it's going to cost. So that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where you have to have a solid understanding of what it's going to cost you to do this. That's how you come up with the number that you're asking for dollar number. So what's included in that? Some people think, I'm going to go out and do this, and I'm going to go for a $25,000 grant because I'm going to research timing of cutback on hops. Well, where'd that number come from? Because you're going to have to justify that number. Down to, in many cases, like with the specialty crop block grant, it was labor. How much is it, you know, labor? Who's going to be doing the work? What is their hourly rate? What is their fringe benefit rate? What's the tax rate on top of that so that you can justify that cost? It's not just saying, I need this much money in order to do this thing. No, tell me exactly how you arrived at that number. And that, frankly, took most of the work for me. Is how the labor part was huge. But then it's like, okay, well, part of the deliverable of this project is disseminating the information. So tell me your plan for how you're going to disseminate this information and all of the costs associated with that.
Yep, because that is a piece that I think it's so important to get right, because the work being done up to and before the disseminating of information, you may find grants out there where you say, well, I'm doing this already. All the other stuff, all the other things that are going on, you know, looking at cutback timing. Well, if you've got your waterproof yellow record keeping book that you're using out in the field, you're doing this already. So that's part of, I think, the puzzle here is finding things where you say, well, wait a minute, either I'm doing that already or I should be doing that already. I can build that into a grant proposal.
Correct.
But the dissemination piece, the communication piece at the end is something you got to be very careful to factor that in.
Yeah. And the things that I saw were, I'm going to publish this on my website. Great.
Your website that gets 4 people a day coming to see it.
Yeah. That's not enough. So the things that they were looking for were, are you going to share this information? Are you going to work with somebody at a university in order to to write up a bulletin for their ag service that has a much larger reach. Are you going to deliver this information at conferences? Are you going to create a poster about it and deliver that at conferences or grower meetings? It's that sort of stuff that they're looking for. So it's other than, you're right, Greg, this is something I'm going to be doing anyways. Let's just take the data. But how do you share that information in a meaningful way?
And as we say over and over again, you know, your time's not worth anything. This takes time.
It absolutely takes time. In a lot of cases, it takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And the lion's share of the funds that we would ask for were for labor. And that's just the way it is. Certainly when you're dealing with some of the projects that we were, and I thought what we could do is we could talk through some of the projects we did and lay out, you say, okay, this is what was awarded, and then lay out how that broke down and why. So people get an idea of when they're looking to write their proposal, what's realistic. And there's no wrong answer when you're doing the math to figure out what it's going to cost. That's just the way it is. That's life. The number is what the number is. It's just math. And so if you're like, oh, man, I added all this up and this is a $125,000 project. Okay, well, it is. What? It's a $125,000 project. It's up to the grant committee to determine whether that $125,000 to answer this single question, if that question is so, you know, or issue problem solve is has that much magnitude compared to spending that $125,000 on five smaller projects. That's what it comes down to.
Yep.
So then you have to say, okay, this is what it's going to cost me. You add all that up, and then you have to figure, is my case strong enough to support this? And I have an example of where we did that and we failed. Hmm. The only grant, frankly, we failed on.
And you, I think I'd say the other question to answer for, you know, before you go down that path is this worth my time for that amount of money? Because if you can suddenly get that amount of money for doing a particular project, is it even worth you to be trying to sell your hops to a brewer?
Right.
If you've got that other income coming in.
Oh, believe me, I thought about that hard.
Yeah.
We were saying, because there was a time there where we said, do we just make this a research farm and be grant funded? Because mm-hmm. we were having a fairly high degree of success being awarded these research grants. Because why? Well, we're all scientists and engineers, so we know how to do this.
Yeah. And you know how to write the proposals. Mm-hmm. More than that, you know how to do it.
Correct. That's a big mm-hmm. deal.
Yep. And maybe a huge project like that, to your point about being five smaller projects, maybe that's five smaller projects that are components of a larger question.
Correct. So, and anyway, these could be multi-year. I mean, this mm-hmm. is not just 1 year. You can have, like, some of these projects would run 3 or 4 years, but be careful what you're committing to.
Very true. And, of course, we've talked about data collection before. You need 3 or 4 years mm-hmm. for data collection. Let's talk about some you've got plenty of examples of successes and failures on this.
We do. Yes, we do. Well, toot, right? I'm going to toot our own horn here. We were good at this. Mm-hmm. And there was only one grant proposal that we wrote that we were denied out of six. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, that is good.
Over the course of our, you know, so... All right, how much money did you guys get? That's the first question I always hear. Well, in total, those six, we were awarded six. We were not awarded one, so there were seven. Six out of seven. Combining all of those, we were awarded somewhere around $250,000. That's a big number.
Sure.
However, it was also a lot of work.
Yeah, there was a lot of work there. To your point about labor costs, it wasn't like there was $250,000 that came in a check that got deposited into the cash flow and we said, woohoo,
no.
We can do things. No. This was you hate to use profit, the profit term when it comes to grants, but the amount of benefit from that $250,000 was a lot less than $250,000, I'd say.
Absolutely. Because if you say $250,000 is what you were awarded over those six grants, that $250,000 came out of my pocket first. Mm-hmm. Because I have to pay to do this. I have to pay out of my pocket to do this. And then it's sort of like building a house and you've got a line of credit that you draw against. That's what it was. You pay for this and then you send me the receipts and the grant pays you back. they send you a check. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. So you're like, ooh, yeah, that's, ooh. Well, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some people are saying, well, then why, if I end up getting a net zero, why am I doing this? Well, because it's something that you wanted to learn the answer to anyway. And maybe, as I mentioned before, maybe you were doing some of these things anyway.
Right.
So there is some cash flow to be made here. You know.
There is. Basically, there absolutely
the
is.
The grant will reimburse you for things you were going to spend money on regardless.
That's.
But yeah, it is reimbursed, though, to your point.
That's the key, is to find the sweet spot in a grant is to find the things that you need to know. You need to know this, so you're going to spend your time figuring this out whether or not somebody else is paying you to do it. Mm-hmm. The caveat here is that when somebody else pays you to do it, you have to share what you learn.
Yep.
And I mean, the number of specialty crop farmers that I've run across in my career, I couldn't even count anymore, not even close. But one thing I am fairly confident in is the vast majority of them think that their production techniques and system that they put together are somehow unique and top secret, and they're not going to share their information with anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, for the love of God, really? No, you're not that special. So I would tell anybody in the hop growing world who thinks that they've got it nailed down, and if they want to do a research project for grant money around nutrient application timing for better yield, right, the other hop growers in your state that are going to see your data are not your competition. Mm-hmm. They are your brethren trying to have an impact in your region, and that's the goal of these the research that comes out of these grant funding projects is, how do we help the rest of us by focusing on what I'm doing now?
Yep, that is such a good point. And it's compounded by the fact that one of the most common questions we get from new listeners is there a good book out there to read on hop production? And the answer is no. But that's because – not yet. Not yet. There will be. But my point there is just that you'd be surprised how many things are not written up in papers and published that you think are – Well, everyone does it this way near me. Yeah, but if no one's written it down, that means no one's officially studied it and published it, which means there's an opportunity for a grant. Mm-hmm. Even if you're repeating something and finally putting pen to paper for something that everyone in your local region understands already, there's an opportunity there.
Yeah.
So why not be the one to do that?
Yep, I agree. So let's talk about types of grants and give some examples. So what I see most frequently is grant awards for equipment design. So you develop a harvester, you develop a dryer, you develop, I don't care what it is, a flame weeder, you develop a piece of equipment that can be built by somebody else, frankly. You're not developing equipment or designs, patent ideas using grant money. That is verboten. You can't do that. So anything that you're going to use that money for is going to be open source. Which, you know what? Great. Because I'm here to tell you, chasing the patent thing on equipment design is a giant pain in the ass.
Sure.
Been there, done that. So we had two grant awards. One was for a harvester design, and one was for a dryer design. And both of those reports were available free to anybody who wants them. And they're out there already from the state of Wisconsin. I don't know what file folder they've got it crammed in, but it's public knowledge. It's a part of the record, public record. And what we found on the, you've heard us talk about the Mangler and Mangler Jr. This was not the Bind 3060. This was predates the Bind 3060 by like 3 years.
Yeah.
And it was our attempt to make a basically what looks like a scaled down wolf harvester. We went through four iterations over two seasons and never came up with a working model, one that was reliable. And that was part of the grant. The grant, you know, said, hey, we're going to design this thing and we're going to prove it and we're going to talk about what works and what doesn't. And so we found four ways not to build a harvester. don't do these things because of X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And the conclusion was, if one is going to design their own harvester, these are the things that you need to focus on. And these are the things that didn't work. Give me my money. And that was $25,000. We got to do that. So what did that cover? What did that 25 grand cover? It covered the cost of my materials to build these harvesters. It covered my time, both to fabricate it, to write up the grant, to do all that kind of stuff, and the cost of whatever hops we lost or were consumed in the process of testing this thing.
Oh, sure. Because as we've discussed, there's no replacement you can use as a proxy for hops when it comes to drying or harvesting. It's just
right.
There's nothing like it. Did it cover fingertip replacement?
Did not. However, it did cover, you know, whatever our workers' comp insurance was.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, yes. That's important.
So that was all part of the cost when we figure out what is the people cost of doing this project. Mm-hmm. So I had to break it down to say, okay, these are the people that were involved. This is how much time they're going to, because they all want it by the hour. So how many hours is this person going to spend doing this? What is their hourly rate? What is their fringe benefit rate? What is the taxes associated with that individual? So all of the unemployment and all that kind of stuff withholding. And on top of that, what is the workers' comp?
And, you know, that's such an interesting project for us because, as James mentioned, this was prior to our creating the Bind 3060. And you'd say, okay, well, this wasn't something you were going to do anyway. Well, it absolutely is, because then when we went to build the Bind 3060, we had a wealth of knowledge of how not to build the Bind 3060.
Yep,
those exactly. are steps we would have gone through in our own development process if we hadn't first done the funded version, so we didn't have to waste our own money mm-hmm. in order to figure out those things.
Correct. That's exactly the reason why we did it. I was ambitious and I was all about this, and you know, if I love building stuff, right? So I was all in, and the amount of time I spent building those prototypes, that grant should have been three times as big because I way, way underestimated my labor.
Sure. And it was our first grant, so that's understandable.
Yep. Way underestimated, but I'm on the hook, right? It's not like I can go back and say, yeah, I need more money. They're like, no, we gave you 25 grand.
Yeah. What you said.
Go ahead and do this thing. We learned something there. Besides just, you know, what we learned about how not to build a harvester. So our next one was we were going to write a manual, a hop production manual. But we got smart. We said, okay, this is going to be free, right? We're going to state, you have it, knock yourself out, right? So we're going to write a hop production manual. That's our goal. But this grant application covered the exploration, the outlining, the rough draft, and I think the first four chapters. That's something Christine and I worked on. And that was like $15,000, I think, $12,000. And we did it. We researched it. We outlined it. We went through all the steps one would go through writing a book. And we delivered the first four or five chapters out of, I think, 18 or 20. And they're like, oh my God, this is great. You know, when's the rest coming? I'm like, there is no rest. This is what you paid us for. We're happy to, you know, so then they're like, oh yeah, look at the grant application. That's exactly, they delivered exactly what they said they were going to do. And I, to this day, I still get people who track me down from finding that outline somewhere online. I don't know where, asking me where the rest of the chapters are. Mm-hmm. I said, well, the state didn't pay us for the rest of the chapters, so you get what you get. And okay, there you go. We said, this is what we proved out of that was, this is everything we think that needs to be covered for a non-traditional hop grower. This is how we would present the information. And here's an example of it. And that's what we got for it. So, I mean, it covered our time for doing it. We did not make a bunch of money off of that.
No, but it was stuff we were doing already. It was a matter mm-hmm. of writing it down.
Right.
Which is, of course, never a bad idea.
And so out of that project came a fantastic outline for all of our Gorse Valley Hops in-person seminars. to where we said, okay, we've walked through all of these things several times outlining this book and we're writing the content down. These are things that we can cherry pick and put into our in-person workshops that then led to revenue that worked great. So those are the things that we would have had to have done anyway in order to build that curriculum, but we were paid to do it by the state instead. Worked awesome.
Yep.
What were the other ones? Oh, dryer design.
Oh, sure.
And those plans are out there, and many of you probably used them, which we called the 4x8 OST, or the BIN OST, where we said, how can we take this idea, all that stuff we've talked about all the time about drying, all the techniques and whatnot, and the physics that are involved, engineering too, that, and get it into a system that is approachable for people to make their own dryer that is going to deliver, that's not going to do any damage to the hops, right? Do the, you know, the best you can do is no damage. So how do we design that? So we did. We researched it. Dan did all of the math and the engineering around airflow and pressure drop. And that's where we started to understand, uh-oh, this is a lot more complicated than we ever thought. Certainly when we start looking at data in ag engineering, they're like, yeah, there's no pressure drop number for hops. Okay, so we're going to have to figure that out. Oh, yeah, there's no air velocity requirements for hops. Okay, we're going to have to figure that out. What is the drawdown rate and the moisture loss rates for hops? Oh, man, we're going to figure that out. So what happened was we answered this first grant question, which was, or not a question, was we're going to design this small-scale dryer. And frankly, we over-designed it just because there were so many other questions that came out of this project that we didn't have both time and capacity to answer that led to a much bigger project later. Much, much bigger project.
And we needed those answers.
We absolutely needed those answers. So these can be iterative. And had we had a sense earlier on in that grant application process, we could have made it a multi-factor, multi-stage grant proposal. We would have said, okay, this is what it's going to cost to basically for us to learn what we don't know. And then this is what, where we're going to go from there. And that would have been perfectly fine. We sort of did that, but we did it disjointed, two different grant applications that are, one could have been, the second one could have been denied, but that worked out well. And out of that came blueprints on how to build this, what we call the BIN OST. And I know several people have built this, and it was about the lowest, the lowest cost, highest efficiency, small scale dryer that you're going to find. And then, you know, cue the copycats, where you look online both for harvesters and dryers, and all of the universities that have weighed in on their version. And again, they're looking for grant money. They've got people to pay to keep them employed, and hops were hot, and there was a lot of money around it. And I mean, the Vermont is just notorious for this. The amount of money that they won in grant awards to design things that were completely not feasible to use in the real world.
Oh, sure.
Like, what in the hell? This is awful.
The number of times I emailed out those BIN OST directions over the years, I can't count it.
Mm-hmm. And they're still out there. If anybody's like, what? There's designs out there? How can I get a hold of them?
Yep.
Greg will email them to you.
I'm gonna put them on the resources page for Hopnology.
Oh, there you go.
I can't
there
believe they're. I never did put them on there, but it will. Mm-hmm. It will be posted.
Yep.
It will be posted.
But that project led into our massive project, which was our last project.
Before you jump into that last one, I just have to say, I'm thinking back to the hop production manual, the first four chapters, and I just have it stuck in my head that the way to do that, given that we said we'd give you the first four chapters only, was that every conclusion we couldn't figure out in those first four should have just said, we'll be revisiting this in chapter six. And I mean, talk about an easy out right there. We didn't do that, but man, oh man, wouldn't that have been a great snow job?
That would have been so funny. See chapter 14.
Mm-hmm. Where's chapter 14? Oh, look at the proposal. We're only going through chapter four.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. We'll remember that for next time.
I thought about, you know, when this latest grant announcement came up, I'm like, should we do something? Then I'm like, nah, I don't have it in me anymore. Like, do I have it in me to do another research project or a marketing project or something? No, I don't. Let's just be honest. I'm not there anymore.
Well, you know, we now have the breadth with our hopnologists with all these different farms to do a kind of a crowdsourced project.
That's true.
Coordinated, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I'd be happy to do the experimental design and the data analysis with them, but I ain't doing the work. I'm past that now. That's other people's problems.
Interesting. Okay, it's something to discuss on the Discord with the hopnologist team.
Sure. There's a deadline to that, so if anyone in the U.S. is interested and they want to partner and team up, then discuss amongst yourselves.
Yep.
So part two of that grant was the last data set that we released, which was, again, about drying, taking everything that we had learned about proper airflow and pressure drop, and what we couldn't put in the first one was temperature. And we wanted to, you know, this is what, after 10 years of practice and market analysis and understanding of what, quote, the AromaSmart process provided for hops that heated drying didn't, we knew just based on a physical chemistry perspective and thermodynamics that heated drying drives off volatiles. And in driving off those volatiles, you will impact the final hop aroma sensory in your beer. It has to happen. Thermodynamics says it has to happen. But since no one ever wrote a paper on it or did a study, nobody believed us. Or they would just brush us off and be like, yeah, whatever. No, it's not a thing. And we're like, all right, fine, bitches. We're gonna do this.
I think that was the name of the grant proposal was okay, yeah. Fine, bitches.
We're okay, fine, bitches. We're going to do this. This is exactly what it was called. You can Google that.
Not from your work computer. It certainly, you know, got people's attention on the proposal file.
Yeah, it sure did. But that was a big project, and that project itself was just under $100,000.
Yep.
Because it involved a lot of people. It involved a lot of analysis. I know a lot of you use Zach at AAR Labs here in Madison. Zach was instrumental in the chemical analysis of that project. And props to Zach. He's awesome. If nobody's using him for their hop analysis, you got to look him up, AAR Labs in Madison. It was a long schlep for that project. That was a 2-year project where we looked at, we had to build these small-scale experimental drying chambers. We had to figure out a way to meter and heat at the appropriate rate for the appropriate time. I mean, there was a lot there just to even get a rig to dry the hops in a uniform way. Then we had to use the same variety from the same batch, the same drying or harvest day, all that kind of stuff to minimize any chance of error. And people saying, well, but you didn't, blah, blah, blah. Shut up, Kevin. So we went through all of that, and then the data analysis and all of the actual laboratory analysis that Zach did on our behalf, stuff that we couldn't certainly do in our own lab. We needed somebody with more chops. Plus, you want a third party doing that and, you know, doing the analysis. So questions about, you know, cooking the books, so to speak.
Right, right. It adds a layer of third-party verification there. It's just the right way to do it.
And in the end, you produce this data set, you do this big write-up, and here you go. It's done. Thud. Throw it on the... Literally, it couldn't make that sound after it was all printed. And here you go. We have empirical evidence that drying your hops over 100 to 110 degrees Fahrenheit not only statistically, significantly reduces the amount of aroma compounds of various types in your hops, but from a sensory analysis standpoint, it's also clearly significant. What other data do you need? So I promptly send that to the Hop Quality Group and the Master Brewers Association and the American Society of Brewing Chemists. Crickets. Absolutely no engagement at all. Whereas in the past, it would have been like, oh, blah, 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 you're not being realistic. So just bury it. And University of Nebraska at Lincoln, just this last year, took our protocol and, or I should replicated the experiment, and they corroborated our data. So now we have a third party verification of the entire process that says, yep, these data are right. If you're using heated drying over 100 to 110 degrees Fahrenheit, you are sensorily negatively impacting your hot potential.
Yep.
So that's, I think, at the end, it was a great swan song going out, but I think that really capped off our grant experience. But looking at, you know, it costs that much because of all the people that were involved and all of the cost, the physical cost of building these rigs and paying people for their hops, because we wanted to get hops from other sites, not from ours, because we didn't want to have any sense of impropriety there. So it was a big deal. But in the end, were we profit? Did we, quote, profit off of this? Yes, we profited off of these grants from a monetary standpoint, because everybody pads their numbers. I mean, you do that for a couple of reasons. One, just to cover your ass. And two, you're like, yeah, this is important. I want to get paid for doing it. So we profited off of it from a cash flow standpoint, but not nearly as much, orders of magnitude less than the value that we received from the data that we got out of those programs.
It's so much value to that. It also kind of helped us think things through. You know, what do we need to do? Because getting back to scientific method, it allowed us to approach things a little bit differently, maybe without the specter of how much this is going to cost.
Yep.
On top of it, at first,
that's, you know, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
If we could have the answers to these questions, what questions would we ask? And then, well, would other people like the answers to these questions? How do we make this work? And but you know, to get back to the point you made at the very beginning, you've got to be able to lay that money out, and yep, know you're going to get reimbursed for it later. So grants are a wonderful tool from that perspective.
This is awful. Think harder.